I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, Señor Nicolas Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle Now, Bizarro World. This is the 366th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World, which is, of course, a part of the Bizarro World universe. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk what we are looking at. The summer is here. People are acting like it. I actually expect and am excited about a lot of exploration. We'll talk about some companies getting some permits. Talk about nobody really knowing anything, including maybe us. But before we get into any of that, how are you doing, Mr. Hodge?
I am doing great, Gerardo. Had a good long Memorial Day weekend. I hope the same for you. Congratulations on the graduation of your youngest. And to many of the grads out there, I know a few myself, both college and high school. So it's a big milestone. Well done, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Congrats to them. Congrats to our youngest. Excited for him for the next chapter there in his art college experience that will be commencing here in August. And oh, look, a milestone for sure. He's the baby in the house. So it's our third one out, and feels a little odd, I must admit, but very, very, very proud of him. And again, congrats to all of the graduates, whether it's high school or college out there. And yes, I hope everyone had a peaceful Memorial Day, and I hope everybody took at least a second or two to just kind of remember what the day is about and what the weekend is about and what it entails, right? And on that note, I hate to start it off somber, man, but I gotta say, shoosh, Kyle Busch passing away at 41, right? Just tough. For those of you that aren't familiar with Kyle, I'm not the biggest of racing fans. I have some buddies that are, but you know, I knew he was a legendary, legendary race car driver. And, you know, one of my favorite moments is of him getting clipped in the middle of a race and him waiting for the guy that did it until the race was over and him just going over there and just popping the guy in the mouth. And that says a lot about the feistiness of Kyle and what a competitor he was. And to die at 41, just tragic. Condolences, obviously, to the family and the fans out there for everybody. But again, just another reminder, man, it changes quick. It changes quick. Enjoy it and make the most of it because there's no guarantees, right?
Yep. We were talking earlier this morning how it goes quick. My oldest turns 10 next week. You know that story very well. She was born in Austin. So that 10 years flew by. And yeah, man, anything can happen. I've lost friends who went to sleep and didn't wake up at about that age, 41, 42. So anything can happen. Don't take it for granted. And make sure you're enjoying it a little bit.
That's it. That's it. Let's get into the markets. Look, the overall indices continue to hit brand new record highs left and right. Everything there seems awesome, despite, once again, us maybe having a deal with Iran, us maybe not having a deal with Iran, Israel doing everything in its power to make sure that we have no deal with Iran, including, you know, the bombing of Lebanon and threats to target people in Beirut specifically. And again, I mean, one of their top politicians is on Israeli TV going on saying a deal doesn't get made without our approval. Like, we're running it. And so it's not, again, tinfoil hat stuff. It's them saying it, right? And so that's where we're at in America here on our 250th anniversary of this great, wonderful country. So look, that's the noise. Despite all the noise, the overall indices continue to make new all-time highs, seemingly on a daily level. We now have the likes of Michael Burry from Big Short fame, which this isn't new because he's typically a perma bear, right? He doesn't get very bullish. He's made the bulk of his capital in the markets on the short side of things. He's convinced that, you know, it's a bubble that'll pop. And we had Andrew Ross Sorkin go on one of the syndicated television shows, Financial News Networks, and say that he knows, you know, the bubble's going to pop and that we're in a bubble and then a crash is coming. He just doesn't know when. And look, there's that old saying, I forget who it was, maybe Jesse Livermore. I forget exactly who it was, but it's you know, the market could stay irrational a lot longer than you could stay liquid and solvent. That cuts on both sides, right? The market in the commodity space, especially in the junior space, you have phenomenal prices. We'll get to that in a bit. As far as the commodities go, And yet it's like boring time in a lot of the juniors right now. Not a ton of liquidity out there. We'll talk about some of the quality good work that's going to get done, but it's definitely an illiquid end to May and start to the summer in the junior resource space. Not so much the case in the broader indices. So a market can remain irrational for a lot longer than anyone thinks it deserves to. In this case, it's to the upside. Thoughts on the overall indices and what's driving it?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot to be said there. So I think Michael Burry had to close down his fund, did he or did he not? I mean, so there you go. The market stayed irrational longer than he could stay solvent, at least in the case of running other people's money. He's obviously Correct. Done a pretty damn good job running his own money. And at least he's got skin in the game and yeah. is in the arena, as it were, as opposed to Mr. Ross Sorkin, Andrew Ross Sorkin, who's just got books to sell and clicks to garner, whether it be for 1929 or... his deal book and the New York Times. So, and I don't think it's that hard of a diagnosis, or I guess that's the right word, a diagnosis, to say that we're in a bubble. I mean, look at the valuations of some of these companies, but that doesn't mean you need to run in the theater and shout fire while the S&P is closing at all-time record highs every day, and other measures of the market are doing okay. Like the VIX is, you know, falling down well below where it was before the Iran war started, for example. Earnings are okay, even by measures of the consumer, like Walmart earnings are okay, Target earnings are okay, people are spending money. And yeah, I get all the things that he said on the 60 Minutes about the distribution of that wealth and how it's not equal, et cetera, on down the line, the things we've talked about here for years. But the market is not the economy, which is another thing that we've said a lot. And the stock market looks, I won't say exceedingly strong, but it looks damn strong, man. Like, I think Micron Technology, I just saw, was the latest company to hit a $1 trillion market cap. And like 18 months ago, it was a $70 billion company, right? Yeah. So there's liquidity on that side of things. I mean, look at the SpaceX IPO, for example, which, by the way, is going to be get more buying. Like NASDAQ funds are going to have to buy that. S&P funds are going to have to buy that, et cetera, et cetera. So, and there's still problems and consequences. Like I've been talking about how inflation is going up and CPI is at 4%. And at some point that's going to slow down growth. But like I was writing in Bizarro World today, in fact, by the way, May 26th, Tuesday, we're recording this a couple of days early for some summer scheduling things. You can just get out your umbrella when it starts raining, right? And some of this, I won't say comes from Keith McCullough, but I've talked about him a fair amount, and I know you follow the Hedgeye, and yep, he's pretty good about diagnosing when, in his parlance, a quad four is going to come. And that, a couple of things, it doesn't have to be like a crash, right? Like, I know that the media outlets like it because, again, clicks and sales and advertising and all that. But, you know, pullbacks and corrections are part of the market, and you can have a bear market or a correction in the S&P without people having to store potatoes in underground cellars for a decade. You know what I mean? So
potatoes are up 700% over the last year. I will remind you, though, storing potatoes would have been all right this year, y'all.
Lots of commodities.
Some respect on potatoes names.
Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that. But yeah, no, that's it. I mean, we'll get this new Fed guy. He's between a rock and a hard place. The markets have already raised rates. Doesn't look like the Fed's going to be able to do anything for the next couple of months. So things to keep your eye on there. But last word on that would be, you know, if you panic or if you buy the shark attack headlines and get yourself out of the market, you missed out on all-time record highs day after day after day. So just take those crash calls with a grain of salt, I suppose.
Yeah, back to your point on the volatility index and some of the other indicators that you and I both watch. It's important to note, we talked last week that, you know, anything above 4.5% on the 10-year treasury was danger mode, and that you would likely see a resumption of progress in the Iran negotiations. That's exactly what happened. Not a coincidence that it sits at 4.49% as we speak. And not a coincidence that oil, if you're watching that, has gone from $106 just a week or a week and a half ago to the $93, $94 range here. Again, on hopes that negotiations really are advancing forward. And so we'll see where that heads. I'll say the same thing that I've said before. for the sake of human lives, and because I think strategically, I'm no geopolitical expert, but I think strategically this is one of the biggest blunders the U.S. has made militarily in a very, very long time. I hope that we walk away saying whatever we need to say for this administration to feel good about itself. But let's not belabor the damage, both in terms of lives lost, depletion of our military arsenal, and obviously the ballooning of debt and the erosion of trust here in the U.S. So, look, that changes by the hour. Obviously, we're going to keep watching it. It is very consequential in terms of human lives and treasury, and very consequential for the markets. I believe this administration got itself in the way of what was going to be likely the one real solid indicator that this administration would have been able to point to in regards to economic growth and, you know, future prosperity. And I don't know that when the midterms come around that everything will be so awesome, but we shall see. It has been a resilient market nonetheless, and regardless of everything going on around the world.
Democrats, by and large, want that war as well. They haven't done much to stop it. I saw Miss Debbie Wasserman Schultz over the weekend, you know, one of the main Democratic strategists, saying that, you know, we should essentially accomplish the mission, et cetera, et cetera. So that goes back to your AIPAC and who's really running the show. And Mr. Massey was saying the same from 60 Minutes to Meet the Press, which she was on Sunday morning. And I happened to check out while he was wearing his little $39 trillion debt pin in real time. He was saying as much about the Iran war as well, but he obviously takes the opposite view, you know, whatever it takes to get it ended, right? So let's come to an agreement and stop the spending of lives and capital.
Yeah, no, look, and back to AIPAC and the contributions and foreign money lobbying here in the U.S. We talked about it last week. We'll talk about it again because they tweeted again. Again, it's not me saying it. They're saying it. Put a picture of Massey up there and their tweet. They took it down after just 30 million views. They tweeted, at Thomas Massey, politicians in the U.S. can disagree with us all they want, but only briefly. I don't even hide it anymore, man. So Anyhow, let's get to commodities. Despite the lackadaisical energy, especially in the junior space, right? And all of the volatility going on geopolitically, we have a pretty resilient set of commodity prices. Gold still above 4,500. Silver still at 77. Copper spot price 615 as we speak, right? Uranium is still boring. Lithium looks like a coiled spring getting ready for the next leg higher after having, you know, needing a breather after a phenomenal last 9 to 12 months. I mean, it's been on an absolute tear. I think the breather is healthy. So I'm liking everything I see in the commodity space, especially given the backdrop of uncertainty and given the fact that risk assets are typically the first thing to get sold when we have, you know, central banks and governments around the world trying to make up for the lack of flow of goods through something like the Strait of Hormuz. And so couldn't be happier with the price action. Doesn't mean things can't go lower a little bit. We talked about that a bit ago. And that would be just fine in the case of gold, in the case of silver, in the case of copper. Clear bull markets to me. What are you seeing out there as far as the resilience and all that commodity space?
Yeah, I feel like I'm a broken record for the past couple of weeks. Same. But I think the precious commodities are softer than the base metals and the agricultural commodities. Copper to me looks healthier than silver and gold does right now. Long-term thesis is intact. So by that logic, it's a good time to be looking at the gold and silver and the related equities. I'll talk more about that in the premium portfolio pick section of this podcast, because I was deploying a little bit of capital into the gold equity space over the past week, being either a contrarian or a victim, right? So using this pullback with gold, I would say down at, you know, 4,500 from, you know, 48 or 5,000 as an opportunity to buy, right? What else? The agricultural commodities still robust. That has to do with increased price of fertilizer and things like that. I see we're back to Project Freedom escorting. You mentioned the Strait of Hormuz getting ships through there, which is one of the reasons that oil continues to roll over. We've mentioned that for the past 2 weeks, and you called it out earlier, down from over 100 to the low 90s there. And what else was I going to say about commodities? You have a dollar, and you already mentioned the rates being up or inflated. You know, the dollar has strengthened and is starting to consolidate at a higher level. So that gives headwinds to the oil of the world and the precious metals of the world. So all that to say, commodities are still bullish. Base and agricultural commodities have held up better and are more bullish than gold and silver, but opportunities to buy in the precious metals, particularly weak and particularly contrarian, is the PGMs. Palladium has been quite soft, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention an interview I watched with Mr. Van Simmons the other week. And shameless plug for the Rural Symposium coming up in July, where we will be presenting and our executive sponsors, and we'll have a booth for the first time in company history, which I actually got to stop procrastinating and order the booth materials for. Rick was asking Van, if you guys don't know who Van Simmons is, he's a partner in David Hall Rare Coins, a coin expert, bullion dealer, rare coin dealer, a collector of all things collectible. Dealer of such things like watches and cards, and a former founder and owner of Collectors Universe, or at least a director of that company, which held the ways in which those coins are graded. Anyway, Rick was asking him, there's obviously, wealth inequality, but the rich are getting richer, going back to what we were talking about, that market's continuing to be at all-time highs. Rick was saying, folks with money tend to flock to quality. Well, what do you see, Van, in terms of that? And Van said a couple of things that stuck with me. Sorry if I talked about this last week. I don't think I did, but
No, we didn't touch on it.
Van said, one, 5 or 6 billionaires have come into the market over the past year or so. And the only way Van would know that if he was talking to the billionaires that have come into the market. He
Let me
was
sing Van's
mentioned.
praises a little bit more before you go on, and please don't lose your train of thought.
It's all good.
Van and his group of friends also are the very first people to ever implement the bid-ask system, right? And so basically the system whereby they say, I'm willing to sell you this at this price, and I'm willing to buy it at this price. So you want to buy or do you want to sell? They were the people that came up with that in the collectible space. They are the group, him and his friends, that came up with the grading system, as you mentioned, Nick, whereby anytime you buy a coin, there's a grade on there. That's him. So when we talk about like the OGs in the space, and when we talk about like the founders of the systems that have really made those universes, and specifically the collectibles universe and the coins universe, work the way that the system is instituted as it is right now, that's Van and his friends. That's who Van Simmons is. So he is the guy, and his group, and in his David Hall Rare Coins, that is the go-to premier collectibles and coins people and person in the entire world. So back to your point about billionaires coming into the space.
And well, and they sold that company, Collectors Universe, to a billionaire, to Steve Cohen, owner of New York sports teams, et cetera, right? So, and he says that so nonchalantly. But anyway, speaking of bid ask and buy sell and collectibles, he was saying that he had a gentleman that was trying to buy. I guess there's like three, I'll get it wrong because I'm not a sports card guy, but I think there's like three Mickey Mantle rookie cards that are graded a perfect 10 that are like known to be around. And Van had a guy willing to buy one for $30 million, $30 million for a piece of cardboard. And Van contacted a guy that he knows owns one, grades 10, and the guy was not willing to sell at the 30
There's
million.
three in the whole world, and he knows one of the guys that owns one, and that's Van.
And the guy was not willing to sell. And Van's point was that, one, these guys are flocking to quality. They want like the best of the best, the highest graded, the rarest. Two, that's just a piece of cardboard. And what he was saying is that he believes, you know, some of these coins, not that they're worth $30 million. I mean, some of them are, but he was saying the coins have more inherent value because they're not a piece of cardboard. They come from precious metals. And so he talked about the $20 gold pieces, which are like the Saint Gaudens and the Liberty pieces, which he's been talking about for a couple of years now, is having more upside because they're rarer. But then he was saying, Rick was asking him, you know, if you had to put money somewhere now, like where would you be putting it? And he talked about platinum and palladium coins, specifically platinum, as being rarer than gold, and how it's not only rarer in the universe to find, you know, quality platinum deposits and, you know, where it comes from, South Africa and Russia and things like that. But also that it was historically priced higher than gold until very recently. And so he was saying that that's a good place to look for value and be a contrarian. So anyway, got a little bit off topic with my commodity rant there, but I thought that interview was super interesting.
No, great segue too. We started by talking about the Rick Rule Symposium. A band will be there. Obviously, Rick will be there. We will be there. It is, you know, by all accounts, the single most vetted conference in terms of the exhibitors, the companies that are there, the speakers that speak. I mean, the who's who of everything, as Rick likes to say, right? It's people who have been in the belly of the beast and have actually gone through in that room the things that they're speaking on. The Danielle DiMartino Booths of the world, right, who was involved at the Fed for many, many years. The David Stockmans of the world, who was, you know, Ronald Reagan's money person and budget person for such a long time. Robert Friedland, everybody knows Robert, right? And so that's the kind of speakers that you'll get at the conference. All of the companies there are there by invite only. The exhibitors are there by invite only. So I believe the actual conference, the physical attendance part of the conference, has sold out, but you can still order access to it online. And look, the bottom line is it's a 4 or 5 day conference, and it's impossible to take in all of the information you're going to get live anyway. I can't think of, you know, a better way, if you can't make it personally, to be able to digest that information, because it's a lot. And to have it in digital and audio form and be able to take it in a little bit at a time, well worth the price to consume and the price to purchase. And Rick gives you a money back guarantee, which is as good as it gets. And that's, I think, as good as a plug as I could possibly give it. And I think as good as a plug as Mr. Hodge could probably give it.
I was just going to say, look at you selling conferences like Andrew Ross Sorkin sells books. Well done, sir. It is sold out. I would have mentioned that. So you did well there. The only thing I would add is I saw Rick on Twitter the other day asking folks if he should invite Thomas Massie to speak at the conference. I wonder if he did that, and I wonder if it'll play out. I hope it does,
because that was someone that donated to Thomas Massie's campaign, and I had no horse in the race there. Obviously, it was for a tiny congressional district in Kentucky. It didn't affect me one way or the other directly, right? I wasn't one of his constituents, but I like a lot of his policy takes, and I like the integrity with which his politics have expressed themselves over the many, many years. And where I disagree, I think, you know, there's respectful disagreements, which is where I hope we can get this country again one day, hopefully not after all of my hair is white and I have grandkids running around to look after. I hope to see some more common sense come back into our political arena before that.
Speaking of gray hair, Ms. Gabbard is out. Sorry, that's the fourth cabinet member to resign or step down. So there's definitely some tumult out there. But anyway,
let's get into why she's out. She's out because she had papers on MK Ultra experiments that the CIA was doing that she wanted to disclose. And she had some more stuff on some of the more sensitive things regarding the JFK assassination, where it looked like people that donate a lot of money to this country and affect political campaigns might have been implicated, right? That was the insinuation that was made. They basically came in, they raided her offices and said, you're not releasing any of this stuff. And oh, by the way, you can either go and leave on your own. This is what I think happened. And your husband's got a health thing. We'll write up the press release and you could say that you want to spend time with your husband, or we'll get you out the way we got all the generals and everybody else that disagreed with us out. So again, not a coincidence that J.D. Vance, who had long opposed the war, privately and publicly, now has been sidelined as the lead negotiator and now is talking about forfeiting his 2028 campaign for the presidency. And so however you feel about JD, clearly a difference of opinion with the powers that be in 2026 is not the way to advance your career. So Marco Rubio is now the front runner for the presidency on the Republican side, and he's also the lead negotiator in the Iran negotiation. So again, just that's where we're at in 2026, folks. Happy 250th anniversary, but we're going to get a free UFC fight. I saw the rendering. It looks amazing.
Heck yeah.
All right. Let's Where else do we want to go? Look, I would be remiss not to talk about Project Bolt, because a company that both you and I are familiar, you tell the story about Story, your daughter, right? Who had just been born when we started covering a company that was called Midas Gold and its Stibnite project. And we went and we visited it and we were convinced that it would be permitted. And there were two reasons why we thought it was going to be permitted. And one was the antimony kicker, which even in 2016, we recognized as very important and very strategic in terms of getting bipartisan and governmental support on the right side of things. And the other one was the salmon. I remember writing a paper saying, the salmon are going to be the thing that actually does, not the thing that derails the project, but the thing that allows the project to be permitted. And so kudos to Midas, Perpetua now. They've done wonderful remedial work. They got the salmon swimming upstream. They got the antimony side of things, and now they got a $2.9 billion loan to construct their project. We talked about that a little bit last week. But this Project Bolt is a part of a bigger effort by the U.S. to secure domestic critical metal supply chains. And that $2.9 billion, excuse me, is only a small part of what the U.S. wants to do. And kudos to the administration on that front. I've been very consistent in applauding them when it comes to policy on critical metals and energy in this country. I think they have the right idea. I'm not particularly thrilled about building walls here in Big Bend National Park or opening parts of Yellowstone to be drilled. I think there's better, smarter ways to do that. But I am absolutely thrilled about the speed with which they're deploying some of this cash and the sectors they're targeting. So they're targeting critical metals, rare earths, antimony, things of that nature to be able to secure it. And look, we need it in this country. We desperately need it. I was fortunate enough. We took our son, our youngest, for his graduation gift. He's a Spurs fan. He's a Victor Wembanyama fan who, you know, has all the skill set and talent and the killer instinct at 22, 23 to maybe go down as the greatest of all time. And I grew up watching Michael Jordan and avid Bulls fan growing up as a kid. I've seen the greatest of all time play before, in my opinion. And this kid has that instinct. He's got the skill set. He's 7'4", 7'5", does everything well. Anyway, I say that to say we were out there. We had a great time. We saw game four, had a blast. We're driving home. And I go to merge onto the highway, and I have three options. I hit a bigger pothole dead on, I hit a smaller pothole to the right and risk veering off, or I hit another smaller pothole to the left. I really didn't have the option of kind of missing the pothole, right? So, of course, you know, hit the pothole straight on, and tire blows out. And luckily, everybody was safe and everything that came with that. I read a story earlier this week, I think last week, 5-6 days ago, where a lady in the Bronx stepped out of her vehicle and fell into a sinkhole, and this lady died, right? There's been flights in New York, the bridges that have closed because the highways and the roads are just literally falling apart. So I say all that to say, in an environment where we got hundreds of billions of dollars for other countries' wars, we desperately need to get our act at home together, and critical metals is going to play, and commodities are going to play a big, big part in that. And that's why Nick and I, you know, spent, you know, the latter part of April and early May, you know, traveling the country and looking at a couple of different projects and getting an idea of what the temperature was like out there in terms of local support and governmental support, projects that have the potential to help ease that need and fill that some of that void here in the not too distant future. But Project Bolt is a step in the right direction. We need more of that. I hope we see more of that. Perpetua getting $2.9 billion to help build that project. Step in the right direction. Applaud that 100%.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add to that. That was really well done. We talked about Project Vault on this podcast. It was probably months ago at this point when it was announced. It's a $12 billion initiative between the Export-Import Bank, which got Perpetua that loan, and a couple of billion dollars in private money. Likely that will grow to even larger than that. It applies to all The 60 minerals, and I'm reading from a report here from S&P Global. It applies to all 60 minerals that the U.S. Geological Survey identifies as critical, including antimony, just going in alphabetical order here, arsenic, skipping a couple, tantalum, for example, lithium, for example. And on down the line, the rare earths, obviously, tungsten, uranium is on the list. And the inertia is great, right? Like we've been talking for a while about the green cowboys and things like that, and how this country was going to have to secure the mining and processing of these elements. And now that's really coming to the fore if you haven't been paying attention. I mean, starting with the trade wars and the tariffs last year, with China threatening the rare earths again, you really got the administration, investors, and even the public taking a much closer look at this and taking it much more seriously, as you mentioned. Giving kudos to the administration for the speed with which they're deploying and the red tape that has been cut. And in those journeys that you mentioned, some of the site tours we did, some of those companies were saying that the folks that they talked to locally, because one of the problems has been NIMBYism, or not in my backyard, you can't do this, you know, build a mine or explore, yep, or drill or whatever it is. People are acknowledging that it is needed and you can't say no forever. So let's do it in the right way. With modern technologies that do have internal costs for pollution and water quality, which China does not have, which has turned into an ecological disaster, certainly in the refining of many of these metals. And then the last thing I would say is, and you kind of mentioned this earlier, with the war, right? The depletion of not just our soldiers' lives, treasure, and billions of dollars of capital, but we've run through a lot of airplanes and drones and missiles that require many of these metals and materials. We didn't talk about, there was a disaster here in Idaho a couple of weeks ago at an air show where two planes collided. I mean, all these things need to be replaced. Luckily, those pilots were all safe. They ejected, but to rebuild those planes and the guidance systems and the autopilots, it requires all these rare earth magnets and then the inputs that we're talking about. And so that's lit an additional fire under the U.S. government. And there's a reason, as this S&P report I'm looking at goes on to say, that they're expediting the mines and the projects first that are most important for the military, which goes back to Perpetua and the antimony, right? Because there's no other U.S. source. And so if it was already important and urgent, now it's all the more important and urgent. And so just FYI, you know, we'll put together a project vault of our own, a secret vault that we'll be releasing here in the next couple of days with companies that have not all of these 60 minerals that are on the list, but many of them, to be sure, at least 7, 8, 9, 10 of these minerals that are on the list that they're exploring for in North American and American jurisdictions.
Yeah. And look, it's this is a trend that is not going away anytime soon. And for those of you that maybe still don't believe that the data center and the tech bros and, you know, the ambitions of the AI ambitions of private corporations are going to materialize, I don't know that they materialize to the extent or with the velocity that they want them to, specifically because we're so short on a lot of these critical metals and copper that are needed to make it happen. But BlackRock CEO Larry Fink, right? BlackRock is one of the single biggest funds in the world. He was out this week, and this is how they always do it. I told y'all like a month and a half ago, they were soft launching aliens on us. And now every month you get a new alien set of files, right? BlackRock CEO Larry Fink came out and he said that using Americans' pension savings, 401ks, and, you know, would give trillions of dollars to build data centers and AI infrastructure. And his quote was, "The United States clearly understands that leadership in AI is not optional and will require sustained investment in research, infrastructure, and talent. Capital markets capable of financing innovation at this scale are essential." And then he went on saying that pension fund assets, including 401ks, are absolutely on the table and should be on the table, because then everyday Americans can benefit in the economic growth tied to the expansion of AI. And that is how you ask for a handout when you're one of the richest funds in the world from everyday Americans. Now, I'm not saying you can't do well in tech stocks. I'm not a tech person. I'm not saying you can't do well with AI stocks or data center stocks. Again, that isn't my cup of tea or my specialty. But I know what a setup looks like to take some of my hard-earned money and to take Americans' hard-earned money without a vote. And that's kind of what this sounded like. Again, something to watch, but if you think capital or lack of it is going to derail these ambitions, they got 101 ways to get us, folks. And if this war with Iran hasn't taught you that yet, if Massey getting ousted by AIPAC hasn't taught you that yet, watch what they do with this one.
Well, watch the 60 Minutes, because I'll talk about Larry Fink for a second, because he was the counterpoint, right? They always do the both sides-ism. So they had Andrew Ross Sorkin. He was talking about the crash. And why things are overvalued and we're in a bubble. And then they had Larry Fink, who was talking about the increased opportunities and how more Americans can participate in those opportunities. And the point that he was making was sort of what you just said there. The wealth has been distributed not equally. And in order for everyday folks to participate in some of this AI upside, that's exactly what he was saying, is make some of these, you know, former off limits investments, private investments, you know, private funds, private equity, i.e., you know, deals that they structure, let Americans participate in them with their pensions and their 401ks. And he sort of then equated that to crypto, which took a long time to get approval before you could put that in a 401k or have a fund. And now BlackRock, along with what's it called? Strategy, formerly MicroStrategy, or two of like the largest owners of cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin. So yeah, he's angling to open that up for sure, and saying that, of course, he's talking his own book, but saying that, you know, that's one way for more people to participate in the upside of this market.
Yeah. So something to watch for, always, you know, looking for things and trying to get ahead of them. But yeah, that special report that we're putting together, that should be, available here in the next several days. Been researching companies in the energy space, in the critical metal space, in the precious metal space, that can provide some of that exposure at all stages, right? Everything from explorers, which is where I gravitate towards the most, all the way up to the producers. So we'll have that to you soon. We'll provide a link once that is live and let you check out some of Nick and I's recent travels to go source some of these things directly.
America's Secret Vault, it's called, just to get the name out there.
There you go. There you go. I know you wanted to talk Greatflation and pool covers, so we got to talk that before we get to the premium portion of the podcast, because it goes and ties into everything we've been talking about with inflation and potatoes and everything going on,
all kinds of stuff. And we did have a reader question about magotes, so maybe we'll slide that in right before we get to the premium section.
Magotes.
It won't take long. I say magotes because totes magotes, but I guess it is magotes. Greatflation. I wanted to talk about this a couple of weeks ago and we never got to it, and I knew we'd have some time today because we're pre-recording. So it goes something like this. 20 years ago, something like 20 or 25% of the grades at Ivy League schools were A's, specifically at Harvard. So 20, 25% of the folks would get A's and on down the line, which means 75% of the people were not getting A's. Flash forward 20 years to where we are now, 2025, 2026, and something like 65 or 66% of the grades issued at Harvard are A's. And the faculty are not happy about this. And I think it was last year's 2025 graduation, you know how you have like a valedictorian, the person who has the highest GPA, grade point average, they don't call it valedictorian. It's some award that they give out at Harvard. You might know because your brother went there and then graduated from there. You know how many people got it most recently at Harvard?
It was a
55-way tie for the highest grade point average at Harvard, because so many people are getting A's. And the staff were, this is called gradeflation. This is a thing. Like, New York Times has been writing about it for a year or two. Wall Street Journal, I think, was the first place I read it And then the Atlantic had a big piece on it in the past couple of weeks here because it's an issue and the faculty are trying to reform it. So, and the kids didn't want it. The kids were saying, what's wrong with everybody getting A's, right? Except like they've done studies, external groups have done studies, and like the amount of study time hasn't increased over the past 20 years. Like the kids are studying the same amount. So there's no other reason other than the, just it's called gradeflation, like a creeping up, just like a creeping up of the money supply, for example. And, yep. And it's like, oh, an A is not worth what it's used to be, just like a dollar is not worth what it's used to be. So the staff has now voted at Harvard. I think then the cap is, it's either 20 or 30%. They're capping the amount of A's that they can give out back to what it used to be 20 years ago or thereabouts. And we don't have to get into a huge discussion about it, but I've been reading about it. It was just curious to me because I think there was a lot of, over the past couple of decades, not the DEI stuff, but a little bit of that, but also like the everyone gets a medal stuff and participation trophies and stuff of that, where a meritocracy was sort of degraded a little bit, where again, everyone's getting an A or everyone's getting a trophy, even if they're not the most outstanding or the most distinguished, which Harvard puts a definition on what an A is, and it's like distinguished above and beyond. Well, that's just not the case statistically in a bell curve and things like that. If 65% of the people are getting A's, then no one is distinguished, right? So, and then I'll tell you a story about my pool cover because it's sort of funny, not funny, and sad a little bit. So over the winter, my pool cover, we have like a retractable pool cover, like you flip a switch and you can close it. So even in the summer, like we close it every night. So like animals and the kids can't fall in. You just hit the button and like the cover comes across. And those covers are supposed to last like at a minimum 7 years, like 7 to 10 years, right? But ours has started like dry rotting and tearing, and we've only had the pool for 4 or 5 years. So that's like half the time that they're supposed to last. Yeah. So the pool cover guy comes out and he's taking a look and he thinks he's going to patch it up. And I'm saying, dude, you can't patch it. Like every time I move the pump, we have like a pump that sits on it over the winter to pump off the melted snow. Every time I move the pump, like as soon as I set the pump down, it tears. Like the thing's dry rotted. You're not going to patch it. It's got to be replaced. And he starts looking at it and he figures out that basically the pool, not the cover company, the pool like management company, the people who come and do the chemicals and stuff, were fucking it up all of the past couple of years. The chemicals weren't exactly right. There was whatever, too much chlorine or too much boron or whatever the fuck it is. I don't deal with that. But and it degraded the pool cover so that it rotted prematurely. Mm-hmm. So what do we have to do? We've got to go to a meritocracy and we've got to get another pool chemical company, except we called the original one that was doing it for the past couple of years. And it was this guy that first came out. And after we met him the first time, like he started sending his son, who's like in his 20s. And I think this is why the chemicals got messed up. Well, this is the sad part. The guy passed away. Speaking of being in your 40s and dying, the guy was in his 40s, pulmonary embolism, passed away. Like over the winter. So now his son's like trying to run the company, and I feel for the kid. I really do, because his dad passed away. Yeah. He's trying to run this company, but at the same time, you fucked up our pool chemicals for the past 2 years, and so like we got to give you the boot while you're trying to like make this company work without your dad. And so, as I say, it's sort of a sad story, but not everyone can get an A, especially if you're not providing distinguished service above and beyond what qualifies to get an A. So feel for the folks at Harvard who aren't going to get A's. Feel for the folks in business who aren't going to get business because they didn't perform over the past couple of years. But such is the world we live in America after 250 years and in a capitalistic society. So make sure your pool chemicals are all right. And make sure you're doing your best for whatever business you're in, because people are watching and you're going to get judged based on your performance and results, as it should be. And that's tough sometimes.
For every 1% vagina, there has to be 99% that aren't. I can't help myself, Nick. I'm sorry. I think talking about 1% vaginas, that's a great segue into the premium portion of the podcast. Unless you have anything else that you want to get off your chest. Nobody likes the new electric Ferrari. I'll just say that. The stock was down 7% earlier. One of the founders came out and said, please do not put my horse on that design. It doesn't have to be this way. That's an iconic brand. Leave that alone, folks.
I didn't see that. I have to look into it. I saw some tweets,
but I'm for all the electric cars. You can't do that to a Ferrari. It looked like a duck.
We should do Magotes for free before we get into the premium portion, because I don't know if that person who asked was a paying member.
Let's become a paying member
of Investing in Bizarro World. So it wasn't really a question. It was more of a, will you two discuss, I'll call it Magotes. So I get it right. Magotes Metals. This is a company, an exploration, a junior company, doing some exploration in South America, near Filo, which some of you may know is a very high quality deposit found via the Lundin family of companies over the past few years, super robust, you know, gold, copper, porphyry, in Argentina.
$4 billion company.
Yeah, and another one that's close to it. I forget the name of the deposit, but it's NGEX was another darling of the market a couple of years ago. Lanahuasi, I think is how you say it. So adjacent is Magotes Metals, and they recently turned up some pretty decent results. I know you took a look earlier, so you could comment. I did as well. Why don't you have at it, and then I'll spike the volume.
Yeah, no, listen, the company's got a $250 million market cap. It was up some 15%. And the reason it was up some 15% is not only because they hit 86 meters of 0.7% copper at the very well-named Filo Sur, right? Filo South, because it's literally on the border of it. But it was the composition of metals, and it was the chemical mix, the rock package that they were able to outline. And mind you, this is just the first 194 meters of a 464 meter hole. So for them to hit 86 meters at 0.7% copper, 0.55 grams per ton gold, some silver in there, some molybdenum, and then start to see, and again, I'm not a geologist, right? But I've seen enough of these to where I start to understand that you need the right kind of mineral mix in there. And then you dig a little deeper and you see that these rocks are the same age as Filo Sur's massive discovery, which again, you know, now has earned a $4 billion market cap. When you look at Magotes and you look at the fact that it's a $250 million market cap, what the market is sniffing out is that they may have something that is similar in scale and now potential grade, because starting at, you know, 108 meters depth, that's near surface for having those types of copper grades, those type of gold grades, and having them in this type of system, waiting on the other, you know, 270 meters or so of the first hole. But this could be a significant copper, gold, silver, moly discovery at Cruz del Sur and the Almora target, and obviously here, specifically the project Filo Sur. So they made the discovery at Cruz del Sur and the Almora target earlier this season. That one was lower grade, and that one you could tell they were on the outer edges, and they're still figuring that out. This one looks like they have a really good idea of where to continue drilling. Four rigs turning, $53-something million in cash. They're in really good shape. And so that definitely is one to watch. Again, $250 million market cap. But if it's anything like what Filo has, that's going to seem light. So yeah, no, glad that it was brought to our attention, and congrats to them on what looks like a legit discovery. We'll see what the drill bit turns up.
Yeah, I would assess it pretty much the same. Assays pending for the rest of that hole where they made the discovery. So that could be the next catalyst. The market's going to have high expectations, of course. So maybe wait and see what the rest of that hole turns up. Keep an eye on the warrants. Yep. It cuts both ways. They've got, it's quite a big share structure. They've got
over 500 million shares outstanding.
Yeah, 523 outstanding, and then fully diluted, it gets over 700 million. But that cuts both ways, because shares are currently at 50 cents, and let me get there, 54 million of those warrants are at 30 cents, 55 million of those warrants are at 40 cents. So that money should start to come in and fund the treasury and take some of that warrant overhang off, convert them into common shares, and put some money in the treasury. But then 66 million of those shares are at 53 cents. So there's a reason those shares want to gravitate to that mid 50 cent range, even after the pop, because you got the overhang from those additional 60 some million warrants. So maybe try to buy it under that 53 cent price, but certainly an honest speculation on what looks to be a real discovery. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. So thanks for the question to the reader. If you're not a subscriber, be a subscriber. Come on over. We'd love to have you on the paid portion of the podcast. Let's get to that paid portion of the podcast. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 366th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great end to your month, everybody. We will see you next week.
See you.